What's going on, everyone? Welcome to episode number 10 of the Overwhelmed Gamer podcast, where each week we dive into a gaming topic, unravel my ever-growing backlog, have a game discussion, share what's currently gripping our controllers, and round it all out with takes of the week, all while sipping on a cocktail or two. We have a very special show for you this week, as I had the pleasure of sitting down with Nathan and Jordan, the creators of a brand new NES game on its way called The Storied Sword, and we also discussed the state of retro gaming. I'm your host, Jason, so grab your drinks, buy an overpriced NES cartridge, let's go.
Welcome, welcome, gamers and tipsy adventurers, to the Overwhelmed Gamer Podcast, where we unravel the mysteries of our game backlog, sip on some questionable drinks, and dive headfirst into the nostalgic world of classics and the mind-bending realm of homebrews.
Hey, welcome back to the show, everybody, and thanks so much for listening. Quick bit of housekeeping before we move on. Like always, I'd like to invite everyone to check out our social media presence, where I post all kinds of gaming content from reviews, homebrew info, and walks down memory lane. Just search for Overwhelmed Gamer on any platform of your choice, or go to the website at overwhelmedgamer.show, and they're all show up right there. You can click on the little links and get there very easy. Changing up my streaming schedule moving forward, just so everybody knows, I was doing Monday and Wednesday nights, but I'm going to change that to Tuesday and Thursday. Same time, about 10:30 Central Time is usually when I get on. And for those that don't know, I'm streaming live on Twitch, Facebook, and YouTube now. So all three of them simultaneously. So stop in if you'd like to watch me stream some great homebrew titles. What else is going on? Oh, just like this week, I plan on doing many more interviews, so stay tuned for that. We're also going to be probably moving the podcast to a bi-weekly schedule starting probably this week. I think it's going to work out best. For one, it'll make it easier for me to reach out to some of these guests and get them scheduled to be on the show and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes, but kind of stay tuned, and it's just going to give us a more consistent schedule, I think. I think that's it. That's all I got. That's my housekeeping. But now it's time to get into a little segment that I like to call What's Gripping Our Controllers. Keg, what's going on, man? What you been playing? How's your week? All that fun stuff.
Not a whole lot different than what I was doing, man. I'm playing that Unicorn Overlord, and that game is getting better and better every hour that I put into it. Yeah, this game is, it just gets better. Like, you learn different combinations and this, and it's, because the battle system, the way it's put, is you can have, like, two actions of battle, or you could have, like, five actions of battle, and you know, it depends on if you're in the front row or in the back row, and
yeah,
and they're all preset characters, and it's actually a very beautiful game. It's nice. A dumb name. It's a Unicorn Overlord. And dude, it's the dumbest name ever, but it's one of the coolest games I've ever played.
Yeah, I seriously almost wonder if they would have gotten, like, more, I want to say, because once you're in,
well,
right?
Okay,
a
so
lot of
like,
people know about
well,
it.
No, I've been, I was looking more into it, and it's Atlus, you know, Atlus, who also did, Ogre
Battle.
Yeah, they're
like the RPG king. Yeah. They've been around forever.
Yeah. And Sega. Actually, oh, really? Sega's a part of it, too. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. And it's, dude, and the artwork in it is actually pretty funny. Like, you don't have to watch the battle sequences. I'm thinking you could probably beat this game in like 30 hours or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I got like 120 some hours in it, but that's because it's me.
Right.
I was just farting around. But you probably could beat, if you skipped all the battles, whatever. But the animation in the battles is kind of what's funny about it. You know, it's, you know, the dude that's got a crossbow, he's literally bent over and winding his crossbow before you, you know, it's, yeah, it's, dude, it's really just a very beautiful game. It's the artwork or the animation in that game is awesome.
Yeah.
It really is.
That's sick. Anything else?
Nothing else going on.
This weekend,
we're going to talk about that. We'll talk about all that. Ashley, what are you playing? Yeah. What do you got going on? Keg's always jumping the gun, trying to.
Yeah, I kind of was.
He's going for spoilers.
Yeah,
it's okay. Actually, he's more exciting than I am. I had my mother-in-law here for 2 weeks, so I haven't really been playing anything different than Sims.
Gotcha.
But I heard there's a Sims 5 in the remake,
In the making, yeah. I've heard that too. My kids are diehard Sims. I played The Sims a lot back in the day, like when the first one came out. I thought the modding and everything was super cool, and I've always been one to want to get in there and figure out how to mod games and play around like that. Right. So I did a lot of that stuff.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing.
Only bigger.
If it wasn't for mods, that game would not be around until this day.
True.
I believe that.
Yeah, I believe that too. There's just so much you can do in that game. Gotcha. I feel like I've done so much in that game, and I still haven't really touched everything, you know, because there's a lot of people out there that are really attention to detail and love to, like, build the houses and decorate. And, you know, like, that's not me. I'm more of, like, the gameplay side, but it's still fun. It's still a go-to, so.
That's awesome. Yeah, for me, I haven't really done much. I mean, I'm still playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. That game's going to take me a while just because of time and the time that I have to play those kind of games.
Because that game is that long.
Yeah.
I've been watching Tim play it, and it is. It's huge. It's long.
I'm still digging it. It's sick.
Yeah.
It looks lot bigger than the last one. Dude, it looks bigger than the last one.
They have a lot of mini games in this one too.
Me about it. I've gotten into like playing the stupid card game, and I freaking hate it.
James been playing that in the chocobo races.
I've watched him play that. Yeah, he was getting frustrated.
I still don't think I understand how the goddamn thing works. To be honest with you, it's stupid, silly, but whatever. Otherwise, I spent a lot of time the last 2 weeks streaming all of the Bite Off contestants for this year, and I got through all of them. I may have missed I didn't miss any on my list, but I was afraid that some may have popped into the Bite Off after I had downloaded all the demos. So if I did miss your game, I'm sorry about that, and we'll find it, and I'll be streaming more of that kind of stuff anyway. But
okay, and you said this is a 1 o'clock on Saturday.
Yeah, so at the Midwest Gaming Classic on Saturday at 1 o'clock, we're recording this episode on Thursday. We're going to actually try and get this episode out before the Gaming Classic, so hopefully you're hearing it before then. So we're going to check that out on Saturday at 1 o'clock. Should be a ton of fun. I'm looking so forward to it.
I'm actually pretty excited about it.
Yeah. But yeah, that's really, for the most part, I've just been chilling and getting ready. I have no game pickups because I know I'm going to be spending some money at the Gaming Classic, so I figured it wasn't worth me trying to pick anything up for the last few weeks. I think that's it. So, let's just get right into it. Does anyone need a drink refresh? I'm still good for a second. You guys good?
Good.
Actually, yeah. I am too.
All right. Well, let's get into it. We're going to go into the topic we wanted to discuss this week is the state of retro gaming. And this, I thought this was a great topic just because, for one, the interview that everybody will be listening to in just a little bit. And
which was very good, by the way.
Yeah. I really enjoyed visiting with those guys.
And actually, and those guys are very smart guys.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's going to be, I can't wait for their game. But retro gaming as a whole, it's, I feel like there's been a big resurgence for one. And I think COVID kind of had a lot to do with that, COVID for sure had a lot to do with the price hike in a lot of these old retro games. But I think it, because of the renewed interest in the retro games, I also think you started seeing a lot of modern games with a more retro feel start to become more popular. Things like Sea of Stars or Octopath Traveler. Not that these games were around before COVID as well, but I feel like there's more interest in them now than there's ever been. And the homebrew scene is on fire right now. I mean, there's so many games coming out.
To be perfectly honest with you, especially with those kind of games, it just means that the story is better than... If you got a great story and just build around it, you know,
I don't even think it's as much as a story, because some of these games that I streamed just recently, I streamed one, I think it was called Cube, right? The other day, it was part of the Bite Off.
Yep.
And I was enjoying so much. I was super enjoying myself playing that goofy game. And there's no story. You're just a cube going through the thing and just trying to not die. And then there's a sense of...
No, just... I heard you talking about it. And you know what? It was the detail that they put into the game that it was just... it was, you could just tell. Somebody put a lot of thought into that versus... You know, like,
a lot of people like puzzle games.
Well, no, I mean, it's the detail that you put into it. It's like, okay, you could just have a dude go this way and this way or this way, or you could have him look up and down, or you could have, you know, it's just like, it's the detail that you put into a game.
Yeah.
That, yeah. Oh,
you know, I mean, you could have the simplest game ever and put a lot of detail into that simple game.
Shit. Yep. As long as you, the fact of the matter is, if it's just fun, make a fun game and people are going to be into it. It doesn't matter what it looks like or anything like that. And I think people are appreciating that more again. And that's why you see, like, we're going to the gaming classic tomorrow. And there's going to be a shit ton of vendors there selling old retro games. There's also going to be a bunch of homebrew developers there selling their homebrew games, or at least, if not selling them, showing them off, which is my main objective at the gaming classic every year.
You're spending a lot of money tomorrow.
Right.
Yeah, maybe not. Well, yeah. Or the next 2 days.
The actual vendors don't open up till Saturday. So, yeah, so tomorrow you're buying all the independent stuff. I know you. You're buying it all.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Ashley, let me hear from you. You're younger than us. So I want to get your take on, because I know you have a GameCube, and I know you've purchased GameCube games, but do you have any interest in, like, older than GameCube or any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, actually, if I had like a Nintendo 64 or even Super Nintendo, I actually might, I can't remember, but my brother-in-law gave my husband, Tim, I can't remember which Sega platform, but it was one
Genesis.
Of, it was either
probably Genesis.
Yeah, it was probably Genesis. We haven't plugged it in yet, but yeah, I'm definitely interested in playing the older type of games. More so because I didn't really get a whole opportunity to do it when I was younger.
Well, hell, because you were born after all that shit.
Not just that, but even my age people had more opportunities than
I mean, some of these games are great, dude. Like, when Sega Genesis came out, dude, and Altered Beast came with it, that was, like, the greatest shit ever. It just really, at the time.
Yeah. The only reference I have when it comes to Sega is Sonic, right? And Sonic came out with our, and it was after they, you know, they stopped making systems and, you know,
Sonic was in Mario for Sega, you know, like Mario was Nintendo. Dude, well, Sonic was supposed to be the Mario
mascot.
For Sega. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it came out for the Mega or for the Master System. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a Sonic for the Master System, which is actually, as far as besides the homebrew stuff, that's kind of my goal at the Gaming Classic, is to try and pick up a Master System.
That'd be cool.
Just because I've never owned one of the few consoles that, well, you know, I nobody gives a shit, but I'll say it anyway. I had a very large game collection at one point, and I sold it all off because I'm dumb, evidently, and now I'm buying it all back in the worst possible time to buy it back, which is now time, because the shit's expensive.
Very expensive.
So,
And
I do it all. I do the thrifting, and I go to rummage sales and all that kind of stuff and see what I can find. And I found a lot of good stuff. In fact, if anybody's in need of a PS2, I think I got like 3 or 4 of them right now. Yeah, it's just, it's crazy that the stuff that's out there that, and, but I love it. I just love going back and playing some of these old games. And that's why I've really enjoyed doing these, my streams, is because it gives me an excuse to play some of these older games, especially ones that I haven't played in the past. And it like puts me on a timeline, right? To be like, no, dude, you have, like right now I'm streaming Dragon Warrior and I'll finish that game for the very first time, the old GNES game. So, yeah, it's been, it's just, it's, I have such not only nostalgia for the old games, but a shit ton of fun. And I think that's why I'm so into the homebrew scene. Is because, dude, I'm buying brand new games for my Nintendo or my Sega Genesis or my Super Nintendo, or you know, you name the console.
Yeah, there's because they're
people
made.
Making games for it and all.
Yeah, and not, they're made for those.
Yeah, and not only that, they've figured out, a lot of these companies have figured out ways to really push the hardware to further than any other company had done so in the past. So it's really neat to see some of these NES games. And you're like, holy shit, this is an NES game. And they figured it out. And it's just, it's amazing. I love it. I can just gush about homebrew stuff all night long, but that's not what we're talking about.
I have a question, actually.
Yeah, go ahead, Ashley. Yeah, what's your question?
So it was actually, it's something that I almost want to ask everyone, like our listeners and stuff too, because I thought it was like a really good thing. So earlier today, I was listening to the radio, and I'm gonna make it quick, right? Like they did a poll between for music, right? For if music was better back then versus now, and where they did like, you know, they did like more keys or more, you know, like more instruments, more, just more everything into music. Like what about games? Like why not?
There needs
say
to
that
be more
games?
Horns. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it turns out, yes, in the 80s and 70s, they did it only back to the 70s. Right.
Right.
And it turns out, yes, music was a lot more popular back then than now. But they also said that, you know, simplicity wise, music's more simpler now, and it's also getting almost just as much viewers as it was back then. So why not do the same thing with games?
Well, we totally could.
Well, that's a cookie cutter approach. I don't like it. I don't like it. It's a cookie cutter approach. And no,
what the fuck are you talking
about? No, because all you're doing is copying somebody else. No, you're copying somebody else.
No, we're not.
No.
Yeah, we're doing a video game.
And then
now
with the whole AI and everything else, dude, you could just get whatever to. If you want to make your own song, you can do it now. You know, but
Dad,
whatever.
We're not talking about music. We're talking about games.
God damn it, Ashley. Same thing what you did.
Yeah.
I see what I did. But
yeah.
I didn't
no, you can
do
the same thing with games, dude. Fucking. Okay, yeah, but right now you can just tell AI make a Mario with a stick figure.
Yeah, but we were talking about AI. We were talking about games now, even retro type games like Sea of Stars. Right? It's brand new, or it's practically brand new, but it's retro style. So take that style now versus retro style back then.
All I'm saying is there like with the retro games, all I was saying is that there's somebody that's putting a lot of thought into these games, even though they're still the old school style, you know, graphics or whatever, you know, like the retro style. But somebody's putting a lot of thought into these games. So that's why I said the story is what drives a lot of these games. Dude, that's what drove me in Octopath Traveler. Dude, I didn't even care I was playing a freaking Super Nintendo game. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The story is a hooker. Yeah. It's a hooker, right? It hooks
Who's
you
a hooker?
In.
You said a hooker,
no,
man.
No, no, no. You know what I meant, okay? Get your mind out of
the gutter. You could have said it differently. Yeah,
Keg, you're a hooker.
Yeah. And it hooks you into the game, right? There you go. Yeah.
Hooker. Start talking about hookers all of a sudden on a gaming podcast.
Yeah, no, hell no, dude. I haven't paid. I haven't had to pay $50 in a long time.
Oh $50? What? We're not going there. Right
now. Yeah, no, don't do it. Don't even.
No, but
say it.
Going back to
There's
Ashley,
so
what
many
you said.
Jokes.
Yeah, I know that's horrible. They're I get your take, and we actually, that's a good thing. I will put that stuff out on social media, and I like the idea of like what you said, like with, let's just take homebrews for example, to say like, okay, what do you think of like what a homebrew game that's made today using the same retro hardware, like the NES, for example, opposed to the NES games that were made, you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, whatever.
Exactly.
That's a good take. Yeah. The one thing I'll say, like the comparison to music, I think it's a little bit different, is that, you know, like a guitar from 40 years ago plays the same notes as a guitar does today. You know, to sort of say like, is music better? I think maybe it's different, styles change or whatever, but you know, in heart, like the Nintendo Switch is definitely different than the Nintendo Entertainment System from 89 or whenever the hell that came out.
I mean, they just have like, they have more options with music, if that's what you mean. Like,
had the digitized orchestras back.
I'm not saying that the music's better though, because put Final Fantasy VII.
Well,
or Final
you know
Fantasy
what? To make your argument
into it, Final Fantasy VII has so. If you look it up, they have. I can't remember. It was like close to 500 songs in that one game, right? But who knows how many versions of that? You know what I mean? Like there's versions of a song because it's Final Fantasy. They use the same.
Oh yeah, they use this. Yeah, they use
thing,
variations.
You know, like
of the same
yeah,
theme.
They use very yeah, but not all of them are the variations. Some are just different.
Oh, the
they're
battle themes.
In,
the
right?
battle themes are different in each game, but
even
they're all
walking
similar.
Around with a chocobo. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I love. I don't want to go too much on a tangent, but just talking about the Final Fantasy games, one of the cool things about them is that they're all completely different games, right? You don't have to play one to understand
but
the other one or whatever.
There's nostalgia in each one of them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but there's hooks and there and not hookers, Ashley. there's
okay,
hooks.
I see where I fucked up. Okay.
In each game that where the music's similar, like the battle sound is similar or the intro sound is similar. Things like there are there's a chocobo in almost every game except the first one. You know, it's just there's things that are similar, but yeah, I think just to kind of round this out, I think the retro gaming community now is probably stronger than it's ever been. And with things like physical media coming to an end for modern gaming, I think what's going to keep people happy with being able to purchase a physical copy is the homebrew scene, you know, because there's nothing better to me than like buying somebody's piece of media, especially a game, and like now I own it, you know, I actually own this game, I can plug it into my Nintendo whenever I want and play it. I don't have to worry about it coming off of a digital store or they close down a digital store at some point and now you no longer own the game that you spent $60 for. And I think you're gonna see a uptick in things like homebrew because old fogies like Keg and I,
yeah, like me,
yeah, again. Want to have that. At least I do. You're dumb. You're the one that you're the part of the problem.
No, hell no, dude. I am not part of the problem. I'm part of the solution. I like the fact that you know what? I will play a game that came out on the Commodore 64 that had. Enough
as long as it's digital.
Yeah, as long as it's like and detailed, good story, good you know, good everything.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
All right,
like,
so
but it could be the simplest of freaking game. But yeah,
God damn it, Keg, you don't listen. I was talking about physical and digital media, and you went off on a tangent to buy Commodore 64 shit. That
dude,
doesn't
I'm
exist.
Telling you, dude. I mean, look, again,
I have something to add on.
Yeah. Hang on, Ashley wants to add on. Go ahead, Ashley.
He's not wrong. Like, he's not really, he's kind of part of the problem, but he is actually kind of part of the solution, too, because all these homebrew games, like, what he says when he says, like, he loves the story, this is great. Like, games that come out like that, right, or even, like, or they come out better, like, or, like, you know, when they get bigger, like Sea of Stars, right? Like, those type of games will eventually get more and more developed and remade.
Well, somebody put a lot of thought into that game.
That's what that this era seems to be doing right now is the whole remake process, right? So if you can hook a really good story, right, in your game with a lot of like good action, like a happy medium, that's what they're looking for. They're looking for new ideas because this age right now is seriously lacking in ideas. So. And you can see it everywhere, not just games, movies, music. I can see that
a little bit.
Well, it's a such thing. Yeah, it is a such thing.
Here's a question, then. So the industry as a whole is, there's no doubt that it's all going digital, right? I mean, Xbox, you know, they're pro part, you know, piece of the Xbox Series SX, you know, you get the next Xbox Series X Pro, whatever the hell they're going to call it. It's all digital.
Well,
their physical media is done for the most part, right? PlayStation is not going to be any different come the PS6.
You knew this years ago, dude, when they were like,
let me finish though. The, and like, you know, Nintendo will eventually get that way too. So where's like, where does that leave companies like limited run games or premium edition games, things like that? Do they continue just making new games or porting games to like the Switch and, you know, the PS5 and the Xbox Series X, you know, with media? Is this the end of that era where, okay, we can get physical media, but moving forward, the only way to do it is to play it on old hardware? And I think, I think there's still going to be a market for it. I think that they could still do that. Like if let's say Switch 2 comes out and it's only digital, I don't think it'll be only digital because I think the Switch 2 is going to figure out a way to be backward compatible. But let's just take it for an example. Let's say the Switch 2 comes out and they're like, yep, we're following suit. We're only digital. And in 5 years from now, everything's only digital and they still want some company out there still, excuse me, still wants to make physical media.
Did you like, say the Switch 2? Dude, you just fucked up my whole world right there, dude. I'm gonna mess around with... No, another...
You don't think Nintendo's ever gonna come out with another console again?
No,
There's already gonna be... There's already rumors about a Switch 2.
Don't mess with my shit! Oh my god. Oh my god, dude. See, because... Oh, you just messed up my world. You just messed up my world. Oh, don't fuck with my Switch, man.
So you just think that Nintendo's never going to come out with another console?
Oh, hell no. I never knew that for 20 other consoles. But yeah. Oh, my God, dude. No, but I never heard of a Switch 2. Dude, how much better can you get? Everything's like damn near real now. You know, how much better can you get?
Well, with the Switch, you can get a lot better. That thing's been two generations behind. I'm not saying it's a great console. Don't get me wrong. If somebody put a gun to my head and said you had to get rid of all your consoles or at least modern consoles and you could only keep one, I'd keep my Switch. Just because of the library of games and everything. But it's coming. It'll probably be,
they figure they fit Skyrim
out. Or in the year after.
You know, I mean, I think it's good 2 years. Well,
dude, Skyrim's 38 years old.
Yeah, but still, it was a huge game. And it was huge graphical game. Like, it was not meant for the Switch.
But it's still old. You're like...
Yeah, but that game's old, dude. That's old.
No, it still was not meant. And they souped it up.
I played it.
I played a little bit. And some of the games on the freaking Switch are amazing. I mean, like, how much better is it going to be able to get?
It's great.
Yeah.
No, it's great. But anyway, we're going to end this before it gets worse than it is. Thanks to Kay.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do right now is...
You could kiss my turds.
Yeah, you're an idiot. But anyway... No, it's been a good discussion, and what I'm going to do right now is play a little music, and when we come back, you'll be listening to the interview with Nathan and Jordan on The Storied Sword. See everybody in a minute. Hey, what's going on? We're back. I'd like to welcome in Nathan and Jordan, the guys responsible for the brand new NES game coming out. Well, I guess we'll get into when it's actually coming out. It's called The Storied Sword. Hey, thanks so much for coming on the show. And I just start out by kind of introducing yourselves. Tell me about the game, even like your other games that you have.
Yeah,
let me know. Nathan, I guess we can start with you and go from there.
Sure. Well, hi, everybody. Thanks for having me on, Jason. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
My name is Nathan Talbert. I've been making games under the name Bite the Chili Productions for quite a while now, like 15 years about, starting with my Anguna series, which is kind of a Zelda-like adventure series for a bunch of different platforms, Game Boy Advance and Nintendo NES and Atari 2600. And now we've got my first action platformer that I've ever done. I'm the Storied Sword, and that's what we're really here to talk about. But it's a, you know, kind of fast-paced Ninja Gaiden type game, and we'll talk more about it as we go. I'll let Jordan introduce himself.
Yeah, hey guys, I'm Jordan. Nice to meet you, Jason.
Yeah, thanks.
I did all the graphics and the music on the game, and I've been doing pixel art and audio for about 4 years now. I released my first game in 2020, which was called Space Raft, which is a game based on my independent rock band Space Raft here in Milwaukee. So it was basically just kind of a love letter to Milwaukee and the independent music scene here. And yeah, kind of just specialized in chiptune, and then pixel art had become my passion while I've been kind of doing music for other projects and stuff. So I'm a musician is what I'm saying.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny too, because we were talking, you know, before we started recording, and I know a lot of programmers that are musicians, musicians, I can't talk all of a sudden, even though you had just told us that you're not so into the programming side of things.
Yeah.
That's all right. So, all right, just, so you're in Milwaukee?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I'm in Cedarburg.
Awesome. Yeah, that's where my aunt lives.
So, yeah, we're super close. Nice. That's where you, would you say your aunt lives here?
Yeah. She's, I think on Hobart Street.
Okay. Yeah. No, I just moved up here. This is probably horrible podcasting, but whatever, we'll get into it.
Hello, people of Cedarburg.
Yeah, exactly. I just moved up here 2 years ago, a little bit over 2 years ago. So,
nice.
Yeah, love it up here. So, yeah. So, yeah, I've been in Wisconsin forever, but all right, I guess we should talk about the game a little bit.
Yeah, I'm from Green Bay originally, so I know that whole coast pretty well.
Sweet. Cool, yeah. Cool. The Kickstarter. Let's talk about that. I jumped in there today because I saw. Well, I knew it was going. When I first emailed you, Nathan, I had saw that you said, "Okay, next week the Kickstarter is going live on Twitter or somewhere," or yeah, somebody posted it, and I was like, "Oh, cool! I need to make sure I keep my eye out for it." And then today was the interview, and I jumped in and looked, and like when I bought the you know $100 one with the right cartridge and everything, and then I looked like I don't know like an hour or so ago, and it had been totally funded already.
Yep, we are so excited to see that. We appreciate everybody jumping in there and supporting us. It's awesome.
It's been a heck of a day.
That's so cool. Now, like I guess talk about that. You know, I've never done a Kickstarter or any of that kind of stuff. How does that work when you're trying to make a game? Like, is the game, do you finish the game first before you put it out there, or just kind of walk me through that?
Well, there's lots of ways to do it. Some folks will put the Kickstarter out right at the beginning of the project to get funding to kind of help them stay motivated, or to actually pay them as a part-time job to do it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We really wanted to have the game done or 99% done, and then we used the Kickstarter really just to fund making the cartridges, getting the supplies, getting the physical product out there. So right now, the game, other than maybe possibly one or two slight revisions for final testing and bug fixes, the game is done. So we really just wanted to put this out as the Kickstarter to say, hey, you know, we want to get interest in who wants a cartridge, who wants the complete in-box cartridge, what would people like to have on the physical side, and then that enables us to make those big purchases to build the parts and get them out there.
Right. Okay. I gotcha. Yeah. That. I was super thrilled for you guys when I saw that it was funded with, like, hour-wise, from when it started to when it was funded. What was that?
I think it was about 10 hours until it was funded.
That's sick. Yeah, that's so cool.
We hit 25% in our first hour, I think.
Yeah.
Which was crazy. It was it was a good hour.
Right, right. So do you have a timeline, then, of release, or do you still have some bugs to fix, you said?
A little bit. We have parts to order. Our campaign goes through the end of the month, so we want to make sure that we're kind of leaving it open for anybody that wants to jump on board for pre-orders, and, you know, till the end of the campaign. So we'll have our final numbers at the end of the month, and then we'll be ordering all of our supplies, maybe doing some of that ahead of time, depending on how confident we are with the numbers.
Gotcha.
But, you know, probably 2 to 3 months is what our turnaround is hopefully going to be. That's our dream date, because with the game being mostly done, it's mainly just a physical production thing. So I'm likely going to meet Nathan down in Illinois and spend a weekend putting labels on cartridges and folding boxes. All the exciting stuff that you don't think about.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it falls on you because you don't have a huge team working with you, right?
To exactly.
That or a machine to put it through the box. Yeah,
The real only unknown really in that schedule is the, you know, getting supplies. You order some of them, and how long does it take to ship? And then you get the boxes and you say, oh, yeah, this isn't quite right. So you need to go back and reorder them to make sure they're high quality. And kind of thing.
Gotcha.
And actually, I enjoy that kind of menial work. Just doing production and stuff, putting a record on and folding boxes for an hour is not a problem for me at all. It sounds boring, and it is. But I mean, I can sit there and think about plenty of other things. So I kind of actually enjoy it. I just consider it part of the process, and I love what we're doing so much that doing the boring stuff doesn't seem like a chore so much. It just seems like part of the path. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that totally knows. That's so cool. What was like the concept or like inspiration behind the game? I mean, anybody that's played the demo, you kind of get the idea where it's very kind of Ninja Gaiden, a lot of inspiration there. The wall jumping animation is sick. That turned out really, really well. I was super impressed with that.
Thank you.
But give me an idea of like what your idea was behind, like, okay, we want to make a game like this.
It originally started, I had been reading to my kids this book series called The Wingfeather Saga by the author Andrew Peterson, and they had this swashbuckling character in there who was just kind of goofy and he would fight off bad monsters, and I thought, it'd be cool to make a game based on this. Now, I didn't want to actually use his property, so I reached out to Jordan and said, hey, you want to do art for a game? And I kind of described the character without, you know, saying what the series was. And we kind of just ran with that and did some brainstorming. He said we wanted you to be, you know, fast and snappy like Ninja Gaiden with a wall jump, kind of like Batman or something. Jordan had a lot of the ideas for the setting. He did a lot of research, and you can talk about that, Jordan, but the setting and the characters and villains. Yeah, I'll let you mention that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, this is realistically only my second graphics project. I did my first game. I did all the graphics on that. And then I've done a lot of freelance work as a sound designer and a musician on the NES. So tackling another graphics project was like a big undertaking. So I really kind of stopped and started studying platformers and how the sprite animations worked. I kind of put a list together of the animations that we would need. Obviously, the running and jumping was a big one. So that's actually where I started the entire game, is animating our hero Cedric, running, jumping, and then doing the wall jump. I really played the Batman, the Sunsoft Batman game a lot. I even put it through the emulator and slowed it down to a ridiculously slow frame rate so that I could just like take screenshots of every single pose that he does and just kind of dissect. I dissected that game. I dissected Ninja Gaiden and also the Castlevania games as well, just to get the how the environments worked, how the character animation worked, how all the enemies worked. Like, all that stuff is things that we had to plan out from the beginning. So that just required me breaking down all the animations, coming up with a good, convincing wall jumping animation, which was, that took me longer than anything in the game.
You nailed it. It's
Thank you.
Amazing. That was one of the first things I noticed when I first booted up the demo. Was I was like, holy cow, the wall animation is sick. Yeah, no, it's super cool. That was one of the first things that came to mind. I was like, that's great stuff. I think that's better than the Batman game, for sure.
I appreciate the compliment, but that Batman has become such a high esteemed game in my personal canon. For research, for doing this game, for research, I went and beat Ninja Gaiden for the first time and Batman for the first time. So those were like two.
Both of those are an undertaking in and of itself. Not to brag at myself, but when I was a kid, I used to actually be able to no death run Ninja Gaiden.
That's a good one.
I've only done that once ever.
Well, and it's, you know, when you're a kid, you only get, you know, I got the game for Christmas one year or whatever, and that was the only game I had till whatever the next holiday or birthday was. So that's all you do is you play that game to death. And I used to be able to no death run that.
I beat both of those games, and I really kind of dissected what the challenge level was, how we were going to approach that. I also knew that like both of those games are games that people now discuss as being unfair, like challenging, but being kind of cheap in the challenge, you know?
Okay. So
we wanted to rub some of that down, some of the rough edges.
Right. Okay, so whose idea was it to put the kickback when you got hit so hard? Because it bounces you way back when you get hit by those ravens or the crows. I forget it really bounces you back.
To me, that was like one of my favorite things in Ninja Gaiden was how frustrating like the platforming is with the birds flying by. And so that was like... I want that level of frustration in this game.
That was another thing that I noticed right away. I was like, holy cow, that thing really hit you back to... Well, that's, you know, when you play a game like Ninja Gaiden, you die so much more just from the hitbacks from getting hit by a raven or whatever than you do from actually losing life.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I thought of...
One of the things, too, is that our easy mode eliminates the knockback. So if you want to just power through...
There's going to be a different... I can't talk. Was the easy mode in the demo or no? You just had the one... Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so the full version has got an easy mode, a normal mode, and a hard mode, which is an unlockable feature.
That's really cool.
But the easy mode basically just reduces, it takes out all the knockback and it reduces some of the damage. So if you just want to run forward and try to, you know, edge people off of platforms, you know, and not worry about the knockback, you can go ahead and do that with the easy mode.
That's a good idea for old people like me. When I play this game, I want to play at least normal just because you want that NES hard aspect of it, you know, that's kind of the point of it.
Yeah, that's the thing. We wanted normal mode to be challenging, that kind of NES style, but we also wanted it to be accessible to people that don't want that. So we're like, okay, let's make an easy mode that people that don't want that can still enjoy the game.
Yeah,
for sure. Going back to like the inspiration stuff a little bit, we noticed, I think a lot of people noticed, that there's like the Andre the Giant boss at the end of the demo, very Princess Bride. So what was the thought behind that?
Well, we just kind of went with Nathan mentioned the Wingfather saga earlier, which is very heavily influenced by the Princess Bride, or at least has a Dread Pirate kind of character in it. So our first hero, Cedric, is really inspired by that. And as we, you know, as I was watching different swashbuckling films and kind of putting environments together, I just started drawing caricatures of Princess Bride characters and other kind of swashbuckling characters. And
all right, I didn't get that. That's awesome. He looks great. Everyone knew exactly who he was when you saw him, and he picks up the rocks and throws it. So it was right on the nose. There's nobody that's ever seen the Princess Bride that's not going to understand what's going on there.
His full name is Nandre the Stone Man.
Oh, that's incredible. So speaking of the characters, now I played through, you know, both sides of the demos with the two different characters, and in the demo, unless I missed something, it seemed like they're the exact same game. Is that going to be the case?
Yeah,
release.
I can't remember how it was in the demo, but we've tinkered with it along the way because we wanted to give them some distinction between each other. So, Orca, the female character, has a smaller health bar, so she can't take as much damage. But she has a much broader stroke of attack. She kind of does this overhead attack that really knocks things out of the sky. She's a whole lot easier to defend herself with.
Yeah, her hitbox is bigger on the sword.
Gotcha. Okay, I was looking for like the actual
that gameplay, that
like movement, like
maybe
or
the level would be different or whatever, but it's not okay. I didn't even look at the her health or the hitbox on the sword, so okay. Yeah.
I mean, it's relatively subtle if you're just looking at it, but once you get playing it for a while, it feels pretty different, you know.
Oh, yeah.
One hit from spikes will kill her, while Cedric can take two, but, you know, it's a whole lot easier with her to just run forward and knock everything out of the air, so.
Yeah.
I think plus, a lot of us prefer playing as her, but I just, you know, saw the review from Indie Gamer Chick, and she's like, oh, I hate using her, I'd rather use Cedric, so.
Yeah.
If people disagree about their favorite character, that means we did it.
That's what a good thing. Do, so. Exactly, yeah.
Right,
yes,
right, yeah. So people can kind of pick and choose who they want to exactly. play with.
We also give each character a starting sub-weapon, and I think that oftentimes determines which character you like the best. Because Orchid, we gave like a boomerang sub-weapon to. So when you throw it, it actually goes out and comes back. So it will cut through more than one enemy at a time. So if there's a row of enemies, you can get rid of them all with that boomerang. But you have to get used to using it. And it also helps on boss fights because you can throw it and hit them twice because it goes forwards and backwards. Whereas, and you hit the first person in front of you and it's absorbed by them, and then, you know, then you have to deal with the next person. So it only takes out one at a time.
Gotcha.
But it has range, and that's the benefit of Cedric's knife. So
right.
we tried to balance them in that respect.
You know what's funny is I didn't even I played with Cedric? Is that the main guy? I didn't even try to use a sub-weapon with him right off the bat. Mm-hmm. I just assumed I had to find one first.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't even know that they came equipped with a sub-weapon to start with.
Oh, yeah. He's got a little throwing dagger. And it explains all that in the manual. So once that stuff is out and you have the official experience of reading through the manual before you play the game like the old days, you'd know.
Right. That's cool. I miss that. I really do with the old retro games where you had to read the manual. There was a game, and I can't remember. It's an Adventure Island or something, an old NES game where, like, one of the puzzles you actually had to, like, take the manual and run a piece of it underwater.
Star Tropics,
that's it. Yeah,
I remember borrowing that
game
from a friend as a kid and getting to that level and being like, I have no idea what to view.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I remember sitting there. So one of the my usual hosts on the podcast, I remember we were, you know, kids at the time, and I remember running through that and being like, oh, my God, we actually figured it out. There was no internet back then, right? Maybe it was a Nintendo Power at some point, but, that stuff's cool. I miss the manual days. That's why I love that the homebrew community in general is a thing, and I feel like it's gaining ground as the whole retro game scene is becoming, like, even like younger kids, like I have three kids, one's 20, I have a 16-year-old and a 12-year-old, and they're down to like play old NES games with dad. So I think that especially with things like the physical media kind of going away, I think this the homebrew scene will kind of keep that alive with people still wanting to buy physical media and buy NES games. I mean, there's the homebrew community runs so deep with, you know, NES game. I have a few Genesis games, a couple Super Nintendo homebrews. So it's
Game Boy too.
Game Boy stuff. Yeah.
Atari 2600. Crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. The Atari.
That seems
stuff
huge.
It's huge too right now. Talk to me about, is there any like big challenges you encountered during the development process that you had to really work through to get right?
It's a tough question. It's a good question though. I mean, a lot of the challenges that we had, well, first of all, it's much easier to make an NES game now. The infrastructure that Nathan and I used to make this game was through a Git repository. And we were able to test our changes pretty quickly, when we made them. So, you know, we would set up level designs and then we would test them in real time. And then once they're situated, we'd pass them to our testers for more feedback. And then we'd continue to refine them. But that process might take weeks or months in the old days when you were compiling manually or you know,
right,
burning EEPROMs and soldering them to boards. That's some serious labor.
Yeah.
But passing ROM files over the internet to our testers and then, you know, having a forum available to talk about these things in real time, like that's a big deal, as well as like the tools needed to create the level layouts and the music and everything. Like we kind of benefit from a lot of this research as far as the homebrew mm-hmm. scene.
Yeah,
I will share one chat. Oh, sorry, did you want to say there?
Well, I guess it's the biggest part of developing these games is understanding what the scope of it is going to be, because if you don't understand the scope of it, it could take you a decade, because you're always going to keep trying to whittle away at it and prove it. Trying to narrow down what you're doing and focus on that is really important. And I think, you know, for a lot of our peers, which for better or worse, a lot of people enjoy working on something for 10 years and just slowly whittling it away. And no, you know, no offense to that approach. But for our particular working method, we wanted to make sure our scope was clean and clear so that we could hit our targets necessary, you know, I guess you would describe them.
Mm-hmm.
And keep everything kind of like focused on what our game design intention was. And that was a big kind of challenge with all of the other distractions that go into making a game.
All right. Were you going to add some?
I was going to add just one story about, you know, challenging things to this entertain me a little bit. Yeah. So we were during development, you know, we've been working on this for a few years and we would pass ROMs back and forth and test it. There was one bug that would make the end of the level disappear. So you're just stuck in the level. But unfortunately, this was so rare. Over the 2 or 3 years we were testing it, we only saw it happen 3 times. And so I was pulling my hair out because like you can't reproduce this. So like we played this game for hours and hours, and you know, once out of every 30 hours you're playing, this bug happens. And I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
So
we found the spot in a video. I save stated that spot in a run through that I was doing. I played it maybe, I don't know how many times I played it, 60 times, 100 times. It was a ridiculous amount trying to recreate the bug, not knowing how to do it or what I was doing. I mean, that was like hours of my life doing the same thing over and over.
I was playing on an emulator and it finally happened. So I hit, you know, save, sat down, save all the history, save all the state, and somehow I flubbed the keyboard. And after that, I erased all of it and reset the game. And I remember going to bed so angry that night.
Oh my
like,
God!
I had the bug. Luckily, we finally sorted it out, you know, a month or so ago. But I was getting stressed. I'm like, we can't release this game with this bug, but.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Because no matter what. Yeah. So somebody's going to get super upset if they buy a physical copy, especially, you know, a physical copy of the game. And that's how they're playing it. And there's this bug in it.
Right.
Yeah. So who discovered the bug initially? You said you had some QA people that were testing it for you that you sent it to?
Yeah,
or?
We've got a great team of testers. We have a really motivated team of testers that send us video and just like lists of feedback that they get. And, you know, watching people play your game is the most enlightening thing. It's hard. It's really hard to describe, you know, because you really have some intention set up and then you watch somebody else just like not follow those intentions at all. And you learn how to make better illustrated intentions for people, but also how to remove some of the friction, because that is something that can really kind of cause people to just turn off a game.
Right.
And so removing the friction while keeping the challenge was like the thing that we were really focused on.
Yeah, I can see that. There's a kind of a fine line between wanting to throw your controller across the room and wanting to keep it in your hand and playing through.
Exactly. Because
you're like, I know I can do this. Mm-hmm. Yep. I haven't gotten to it yet.
Yep. I want my players to be angry because they can do better and not angry because the game is janky.
Exactly. Right. Because they think it's broken or something went wrong.
And that, you know, that feeling that I got really learning how to play Ninja Gaiden is that game really encourages mastery. You die and try again, and you die and try again. It really like encourages you to keep trying and to keep trying new things.
Right.
Which is something that I really wanted to recreate as well. You know, just the idea that, like, you can get good at this. And when you get good at it, it feels really good.
Right. Yeah.
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 Like, so you're you're flying around, you know? It feels good to fly around.
I'm assuming the difficulty is going to kind of ramp up from the first level of the demo. I thought the demo was really, really well done because it wasn't, like, too hard, but it still gave you that aspect of, like, all right, I kind of see what they're doing here. Mm-hmm. So is the difficulty going to ramp up as the levels increase? So
definitely, yeah.
It gives you that. Okay.
We've been working, and that's one of the things that we really needed our testers on, to, you know, gradually ramp it up. So the first few levels, you know, you have to work out a little bit, but then somewhere, just six worlds total, but somewhere around level, through the end of 3-4, it starts to really get challenging.
Yeah. And then it's knowing where to, like, where to put the peaks and the valleys, because we can't have it all be peaks. We need to let the player coast at some points so that they feel confident with the skills that they've acquired. But then we also need to kind of structure the challenges so that they're learning how to do these things so that we can throw the book at them in the last level.
Nice. So I don't want you to give away anything, but are there any other, like, Easter egg stuff in the game, like an Andre the Giant or things that people will go?
It's all like amalgamations of things. There are things that you might recognize from influences of things. And after the first level, it gets a lot more convoluted as far as where the influences are coming. Because, like, there's a character that looks a little bit like Inigo Montoya. But to me, he kind of also looks like Tony Iommi from Black Sabbath. So in my mind, he just became the both of them. And now he's kind of his own thing. So now it's just it kind of is what it is.
Yeah, no one replied on the nose as Andre.
Yeah.
As Andre. Okay. Yeah. But you know, that was the perfect way to suck people into wanting to check this game out for the demo, was having that Andre on the first level. Right, it was so, I mean, I can imagine there were so many people that were like, I get this. I'm the Dread Robert pirate, and there's Andre the Giant, and I get to beat him up, and on we go. So it was great. I super enjoyed just playing the walkthrough or the demo. So it's good stuff. So
speaking of Easter eggs, though, we included the Vizzini character is. So he's the smartest one in the group in The Princess Bride, but he's definitely the dumbest one in our group.
Because the one that's like that takes the poison that is the game with the poison. Yeah.
Yeah, we modeled him after the hunchbacks in Castlevania. So he just jumps around and stabs people.
That's hilarious.
Every time I see it, I don't know if people are going to make that connection, but every time that I see it, I giggle a little bit. Because he's this brilliant guy with a knife, and he's just going to jump at you. That's his plan.
That's amazing. What do you want people to take away from their experience with the game? Like, after they've played the game or they're playing the game, like, what are you trying to give them? Ultimately, I guess.
Really, I mean, Jordan mentioned that mastery and flying through it, and that's what I wanted to recreate, and I think Jordan did too, is that, like, yes, it's a challenge the first time. So the first time through, people are swearing and throwing their controller against the wall, and like, I hate this game. And then they get through it, because they keep wanting to come back, and then the next day they're like, oh, I can do that, I'm going to do it again. You know, I want to fly through that again. And
And that first level goes by so much quicker the second day, because you know where all those challenges are. And it feels like the second day when you play it, you're like, oh yeah, I know this part, let's go.
Yep.
That's the feeling that we want, you know?
No, that makes all the sense in the world. Trying to think if I have anything else, like any other questions or anything. I think we've covered a lot of what I wanted to ask you. Is there anything else that you wanted to get out to people or talk about, or how anyone would find you?
Well, first of all, I don't know when this is coming out, but we'll be at Midwest Gaming Classic next week. And that's like a definite come and talk to us.
Three more sleeps, man.
Yep, exactly. Soon. I mean, I got to pack my stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, most of all, it's like, I find the NES to be a really fulfilling creative platform, like a very interesting place for self-expression. It's almost like a kind of, I did an interview earlier today and I described it as like a, it's like a 21st century technological based folk art. You know, it's like
that. I mean, seriously, that is on the nose. That's a perfect way to describe it. Yeah,
it's you know, we're kind of I mean, video games are young. Like many of us are, we saw them birthed. You know, like we saw the first consoles. We saw the, you know, the Magnavox Odyssey or whatever. It's like that's living memory. You know what I mean? And like, mm-hmm. we're kind of reaching the point with video games where we're starting to study them as and taking them seriously as like an entertainment medium, like film is or whatever. And like,
yeah.
we're really to the point, like you can almost look at like the golden age of video games as being like the silent era. And we're just getting into like the talkies now. And like, or no, we're getting into the film school era, or we've got the young Scorsese's out there who are looking at Super Mario Brothers and wondering like, what is right about this and what can I improve? You know, people are looking at these questions and like so well that you can go back to them and keep learning from them. Right. And I think like the same is true about like the limitations that the hardware creates, because playing within this particular sandbox, like you can do anything within it, but you gotta like, there are some really stiff rules.
Right.
But the, you know, you're basically like everything with the NES gets shrunk down into a really miniature state. You're playing with a lot of big level. And I think that's really interesting. And it's something about it reminds me of like, old geezers playing with model railroad sets in the 50s. You know what I mean? It's like you're creating these little worlds and then you can walk people through them like, oh, look at this guy. He's standing on this hill with a knife. like you could imagine some excited old man walking you through about how the relays work on this particular stop in a model railroad town, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So,
you know, that brings a ton of value to people's lives, like recreating these things and sorting out your own life by building something else in miniature, you know? I don't know, I just find it so inspiring to be able to make these little things that bring so much value to people's lives and bring so much joy, you know?
Yeah, that's so well said, too, with especially with, like, going back to, like, the constraints of, like, the NES, right? And to be able to use, to, like, look at some of these super big games that are out there and to go, okay, I want to make something like that, but how do I fit it into an NES cart?
Yep, right.
Mm-hmm. So people can enjoy it the way they used to, mm-hmm. or, you know, and it's like, because a lot of people have memories of the NES where it's just like, oh, it's what it was. And you played Mario and you hit your head on a block and you got the mushroom mm-hmm. and went through. But I love the creative pride. And that's what's really brought me into the homebrew scene as far as like wanting to play things, maybe wanting to create a game myself at some point, is the idea of just having a grand idea and saying, okay, well, how do I bring that to a smaller scale and mm-hmm. really push the NES to its levels, and watching all these homebrew developers do that and create these games that are like, oh, this would have been one of my favorite games I ever played on the NES if it came out in 85. Mm-hmm. Like, I just finished, not too long ago, I went through Dungeons and Doom Nights.
Well, that's a great game.
And I was super impressed with that game. I loved it. I streamed the whole gameplay of it and everything. And, it doesn't... I just love it. All the creativity that's out there... And I don't think it's going to stop either.
I hope it doesn't. This
is a niche that can just keep going forever. So if there's people out there that are like, dude, I would just wish I could play like my old NES games. That's great. You can play your old NES games, but you can play all these new NES games too that are going to keep coming out and keep pushing the system to its limits. Whether it's, you know, downloading a ROM or buying a physical piece of media, I just think it's absolutely phenomenal, amazing. I love the whole scene, and that's where I want to get the word out as much as I can.
Yeah, thanks.
As far as these developers go and everything else, I've been starting to do a video series called Homebrew Overviews.
Nice.
I've only done one so far, and I wanted to get more and more going where I can just push it out and it's just me like playing a game for a little bit and then like having the video showing of the game and me talking over it or whatever. But
that's awesome. I can't encourage that kind of stuff enough, because the more the more cheerleading that we can get going for homebrew, the better. I mean, I consider myself that when at any MGC, I'm there talking about homebrew and getting people excited about it. Because, you know, one other thing to add to the last comment is that, you know, when I was young, falling in love with these NES games, I thought that they came from outer space. I had no idea who made these things.
Yeah.
You know, they were made in Japan, and the language barrier was so stiff in the 80s that we had no idea how we could ever hear what the person who wrote the music to Castlevania was thinking, or what the map designer of Zelda 2 was thinking. Like, we couldn't even we couldn't ask these people questions or find out more information. Yes, homebrew development community and the players is really special, because we all have questions about the NES as fans and developers and whatever, because of all of this gray area that we weren't able to get answers from during the heyday. And so now it's like this magic box has been, black box has been exposed to us. We can kind of get in there and literal black box, right? But we can get in there and see how it works. And like, you know, these games live rent free in people's imaginations. You know, it's like how many people in your neighborhood, how many kids in your neighborhood planned out their own levels or drew out Castlevania levels or at least thought about or talked about it on the playground. It encompassed actual imagination in people's heads. You know what I mean? I think contributing to that or encouraging it in others is just like a really inspiring thing, you know? And so I'm always like, talk about homebrew. Encourage people to ask about homebrew. Like, we want to talk about homebrew too. So if you have, we just don't want to bore you. So like,
no, well, you're never going to bore me. But yeah, that's kind of been my shtick too. Is so I just started like I did a podcast a long time ago with a buddy of mine that's actually usually on this one. But my so like right now I'm all about like the homebrew scene. So I stream mainly just homebrew games. Like right now I'm streaming. I downloaded all the games for the Bite Off.
Nice.
And I'm streaming through all of those. I just did. I probably got through about a third of them so far. And then tomorrow night I'll finish them off. So that's what I've been streaming lately. That's great. Just those games and just kind of getting the word out about that.
I played through those last week. I think I did music on three of those games.
Oh, did you really? Which ones?
I did music on Pizza Portals, on Craters.
Pizza Portals is so good.
Yeah.
That's... Now, is that the same? That's the same guy that did Dungeons and Doom Nights, right?
Yeah, that's Arctis.
Oh, nice.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, we were all too busy, and he was like, screw it. I'm just going to spend a week doing this, and then if you guys are with me, you're with me or whatever.
It's so good.
It's fun.
It's so good. It's so fun. Yeah.
And I did a Crater song too that John Vanderhoof did. It's the dual stick.
The one where you have to use both controllers?
Yep. I did music on that. And nice. I did another game for Artix. Artix did another game with his kids. I think it's called Dragon Raid. And I wrote a song for that just so that they'd have some music. And
I don't know that I got to that one.
It's just a dragon destroying stuff. It's very...
Yes,
it feels good.
How fun is that? Yeah, I remember. I didn't know that was him.
Here's a bunch of stuff, dude, to break.
It feels so good. Yeah, it's just like, we're playing the dragon, running around, just breaking the houses and all kinds. Yeah, that's amazing.
And he made it with his two of his kids. I think it was just a really charming project. And it's, I saw that he was making it. And it was like, you need some music for that. Let me just write you a 15-second song that you can use. And it came out really well.
That's awesome.
Anybody that's making games with their kids, I'm like, I'll just give you some music. Don't just make some memories. Go do this, you know, enjoy yourselves.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So do you guys have anything else you want to chime in here before we kind of wrap the podcast piece of it up anyway?
No, I just appreciate you having us on. Thank you for talking about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and thanks so much for coming on. Anytime we can do anything for the homebrew community, I'm so stoked.
Yeah, thanks for the support overall. Make sure that you stop by at MGC.
Yep. I'll be there.
Yeah. Just keep talking about homebrew. That's what we like.
Nice. Sounds good. Hey, what's going on, everybody, and welcome back to the pod. Hope you enjoyed the interview with Nathan and Jordan. I can't wait to get a full copy of that game. It's going to be absolutely amazing. And if you haven't played the demo yet, just go play the demo. And also, make sure you go hit up their Kickstarter. It's already funded. So just go order your copy. I got, like, the big bundle where I'm getting, like, the red cartridge and the cloth map and all kinds of good stuff. I encourage everybody to support their game. But now comes the time where we go around the room and give our last takes. And yeah, I think we all know what we're going to talk about, and that's the Midwest Gaming Classic, right? That's all I got. Yep. This weekend. That's all I got to talk about. And
everybody's, and everybody's excited. Everybody's got anxiety. You know, Ashley and I were talking about this earlier.
About anxiety, but
it's not anxiety, so to speak, but it's that anticipation. It's okay.
A little bit different.
Like waiting for Christmas morning. Like waiting for waiting for the first day of school. You know, like there's no way in hell any of us are going to sleep tonight because we're going to be, you know what I mean.
Oh, I'll sleep.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I probably will too. But it's just the anticipation. And sometimes the anticipation is better than we might have blew it up so much that we get disappointed. But I don't think I'm going to be disappointed.
Well, for us, it's just a matter. It's a chance to hang out and do whatever. Yeah. But it's
we got things in mind. We got people to meet and.
Yeah, we got all kinds of shit going on. It's going to be amazing.
You said that Friday night's been sold out. I don't think Friday night's ever been sold out.
So I think Friday night, I was reading some posts, and I think Friday night sold out last year, but it wasn't as early as it did this year. I think it sold out like on the day, like they've sold the last few tickets, but. Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff that I'm looking forward to.
Saturday, I think I heard there was like 3,500 people there, or 3,800 people, something like that.
I don't even know. I can't.
Yeah, no, I read. It's more than I thought it was, and there's a lot of people there. Where like every machine had like six people waiting to play it. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. That's always
and
crazy.
There's a lot of machines. But, I mean, there's a lot of other stuff happening, too.
Anyway, I'm super looking forward to it. There's going to be a lot of cool stuff going on. Actually, give your last take real quick before I finish this up.
All right, last take. What I'm searching for at the Midwest Gaming Classic is a 3DS. All right, that is my ultimate goal. I want to find a 3DS, a working, very good condition 3DS. And for cheaper than probably what they're going to sell me.
Holy crap. Are you watching this, Ash?
He's showing me. Are you selling it? I'm going to look up prices. Okay, see?
Because she wants Chronicles.
Now, I want Crystal Chronicles for the 3DS and for the GameCube because it's a collaboration game.
Yeah.
And I would love Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles. It's very good.
You suck.
I want to play it. Yeah, you really do suck. We got our 3DSs. I had a Zelda version 3DS and it was stolen. All right. So I hate you. I am not a fan right now.
Animal Crossing. I
had all those games at one point. Yeah.
So I'm looking for Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles for the GameCube and the 3DS.
You'd be a real winner if you actually find a 3DS and
you'll find a 3DS there. There'll be a shit ton of
them. Right?
That we played Zelda the Four Swords?
That too. But no.
Yeah, it was a GameCube or it was a 3DS and a GameCube game, right?
No, it was a Game Boy Advance and a GameCube game.
Oh, okay. All right. Gotcha. Zelda the Four Swords. That was a great game.
I'm also looking for an original DS Fire Emblem. That'd be cool. Oh
shit! Whoa. I don't know how much that costs right now,
dude. That's probably a high price.
That's gonna be up there, mm-hmm. Yeah. But if I see it, you know, like if depending on the price.
Well, something's just hit home. It's like, yeah, the nostalgia just gets you. Like,
one of them.
Yeah, that's awesome.
One of them.
Dude, that's a great one. That's actually, mm-hmm. Yeah. That's one to like post on your shelf. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else, Ashley?
No, that's it. Yeah, all I right. mean, I might get some like mementos, but like,
yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, for me, like I've talked about it 1,000 times, homebrew stuff, and I just want to say, anybody that, you know, we got a whole bunch of friends coming to the gaming class that we'll be hanging out with, but, it's going to be a great time. I can't wait. And I'll post all kinds of shit on social media about it and everything else. Probably a little bit during the events.
Are you going to be like recording all weekend?
No, fuck no. I got shit to do. Yeah. I can't sit
That's
around
what
and
I'm
record
saying, dude.
All
I ain't, yeah. I'm out there to have a good time, man. I don't fuck. Yeah.
I'll take some videos and stuff, but. Yeah.
We love you guys, but we'll see you after.
Yeah, we'll see you after. Yeah.
We'll tell you what happens, man. We ain't videoing that shit.
Yeah. All right, exactly. So that's it. We're going to wrap this one up. And thanks, everyone, again. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Good night.
Good night.